Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing house demolition and land grabbing in Nigeria, looking at the legality of such actions under the Nigerian Land Use Act. I'm joined by a special guest, Dr. Ambrose Igboke. Dr. Igboke is a communication scholar. He's a journalist, a broadcaster, and a public relations consultant. He is the Africa Regional Communication Expert, POPS Free Projects, Plastic Projects. He's also the chairman of the Guild of Public Affairs Analysts in Nigeria, Enugu State Chapter, among many other positions that he holds. Ambrose, it's a great pleasure of mine to have you join me today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Brilliant. So let's start off. In recent years, we've seen a spate of house demolitions and land grabbing, and this is across Nigeria, but we've seen it in some states. It's more in some states like Lagos or even Abuja. What are the factors behind these kind of demolitions and land grabbing?
I think one of the biggest problems that give rise to land grabbing in Nigeria is the fact that the Nigerian states, both at the federal level and at the state level, have refused to engage in proper town planning mechanism over the years. And so because of the absence, you know, nature abhors vacuum, because of the absence of proper land town planning, a lot of people, take the initiative to start appropriating land to themselves. And this cuts across both state actors and non-state actors. So what happens that those in the Ministry of Land begin to appropriate land the way they want? They sell the idea to commissioners, they sell the idea to the state governors. And because the Land Use Act, which is a military, decree that was effected in 1976, that is refused to be pushed from our constitution and turned to a parliament, an act of parliament, was still left there, where the sole ownership of land in every state was vested on military governors, now civilian governors. So it doesn't matter whether the land is your ancestral land, whether it's your farmland, whether you inherited it across many generations, it states that the land belongs to the state. And that any time the state has any need for it in terms of overriding public interest, that phrase is what is being used by state governments and federal government to appropriate land to themselves, even without conversations many of the time, overriding public interest. So the language overriding public interest is left for the governors or the commissioners or the federal government to interpret however it suits them. And so we have seen a lot of draconian activities over the years. So a government is supposed to map out lands for different purposes, commercial area, industries, habitation by citizens, for farmlands, and for mining, and so many other things that a country engages in. But over the years, government has abdicated that responsibility. So when urban, you know, there was what we call urban migration from the rural areas, it starts affecting urban because there was no planning. Let's take example of Lagos and Abuja. Because there were, even though Abuja was properly planned, but the effective became a problem after a while because the suburbs that you know are in the FCT were left in the hands of some of the indigents, and they started selling lands and the rest. And because government presence was not there, this escalated for many years until I think Mr. Nasir El-Rufai became the minister of the FCT during the Obasanjo government, and they started demolishing houses and demolition shops, all kinds of structures. See, today they have not still gotten it right. It has been defaced. If you take example of Lagos also, the Lagos stopped planning so many years ago, I think after the time of Mr. Governor Jakande, from 1979 to 1983, and there's no serious planning that have taken place because you allow a city to, imagine, let's take the example of Lekki, after the Lekki Peninsula, the phase one was planned, the other places were just left to develop on their own. I remember as a young man, we used to go to the beach in Lekki, you know, the whole place was just, you know, developing on its own. People now, so developers come, meet those in the ministry, get some swaths of land, large swaths of land, you get development. Sometimes there are no infrastructure, so accompany those developments. So explosion and of population, explosion of housing in uncoordinated manner, and there are no central coordination. So these are the things that have gone. So what happens is that the natives of the place, or sometimes the people that found themselves first to arrive in a place, appropriate the land as their own, and they begin to sell this kind of land, in most times in collusion with the state actors in the ministries. And a lot of time there are multiple, some degree ones sell one piece of land to different individuals, sometimes 10, 5, 15, 30. And then, you know, everybody claims it is their own. And it has escalated in wars and fighting and the rest. And but in Lagos, there's a thing that has glued to the public called Omonile. Omonile, transliterated into English language, means the child of the soil, so which means in broader terms the native of the place. And when you buy, they sell this land to them, the government will come back and tell you, oh, this land, it doesn't have the right to sell it, he doesn't have the right to sell it. But sometimes this land has genuine documents from the ministry, from the departments that are responsible for it in the various states, but government still turn around and say, oh, the person that issued it in error, or the person has retired, or the person was not supported. Genuine document that was given, and then the rest thing that they say, oh, it's a government mapped out area, and it's, you know, it's not supposed to be used for individual development. So these are some of the underlying currents and factors that have entrenched the issue of land grabbing in Nigeria, both by state actors and non-state actors.
Oh, very interesting. Thank you for such a broad explanation. There are certain things that are picked up from there, but let's stay on the state actors. Like one of the things that we've seen, and I said that in my last book, that Nigeria is a militarized democracy where the military still rules in some way. You mentioned the Land Use Act of 1978, and that is a, like our constitution is a military document. It's one that is militarized. And then yes, I think
can you talk a little bit louder? It's raining here, and I'm struggling to hear you.
I was just agreeing with you on the continued influence of the military in Nigerian politics. And you mentioned the Land Use Act of 1978, and how that is a military document. So I was agreeing with you that in my last book, I talked about the Constitution itself. Is also a military document, and how Nigeria's democracy is a militarized democracy. So, but I will pick on some of the things you mentioned, but there's an aspect that I want to focus on, the overriding public interest, which is I think part five of the that Land Use Act. But what we've seen specifically in Lagos, we've seen where it does look like a particular category of people, maybe a particular tribe of people are being targeted. So I want to see if you agree with that. So we've seen in places, maybe like in Alaba, maybe see places in Oshodi, places where, let me say, the Igbos are kind of like concentrated. Maybe they are businesses, maybe they are houses. Do you think this falls under that, or do you think there's other underlining things in this kind of demolitions by the state government?
There's a big problem with that phrase, overriding public interest. It is very bogus, very wide-reaching, and very, very ambiguous. I think it was contrived to be like that so that it could favor the government. And let's take an example of some other countries where once the land is established as your own, especially through ancestral lineage, through inheritance over the years, it is your land. Even if the government, for example, discovers crude oil or discovers other solid mineral that's on your land, as is applicable in the United States, for example, any land allocated there, you are the owner of the land, and any mineral resources is discovered for the overriding public interest of the state. The land in that place, the land belongs to you. So the government comes to you, discusses with you, tries to exploit mineral from the land, bring you into the transaction, and then you earn massively from the oil production in that land, or gold, or whatever that is being processed from the land. Sometimes generational, you earn from it, your children earn from it, your grandchildren, your whole generational line. That has made some families in the United States to be rich in across all generations. Still today, we have seen it happen, and some of the multi-billionaires in America, sometimes are the people who oil are discovered. Some of them sold to bigger oil companies and the rest. But this is not applicable in Nigeria. In Nigeria, it is said that don't even own the land. Your ancestral land, that your ancestors have been there for, let's say, 1,000 years, 600 years, 500 years, you don't own it. That belongs to somebody in Abuja, or called the federal government. And when, something is discovered there, for example, oil exploitation, you are pursued away from there without any compensation. We saw that play out in the Niger Delta, in the oil exploitation. We saw that lead to agitations in the Niger Delta, killings, kidnapping, busting of pipelines, and the rest. It took the initiative of the late President Yar'Adua to be able to create an amnesty program that made the agitators put down their arm. But it's still going on in a milder scale. But now we are seeing it also now happening in the Northeast, where, as some part of the Northwest, where gold is being discovered, and all kinds of shenanigans is happening, the terrorism, banditry, sacking of villages and the rest. This is because government is not proactive. Now, the terminology overriding public interest is supposed to be something that is beneficial to the society, something that is beneficial to every citizen. And so, when you want to use somebody's property that you have given to the person, you are supposed to do the proper consultation, do adequate compensation, ensure that the person is part of the process. But in many cases, or in most cases we have in Nigeria, the person is never part of the process. The government uses its might, come down hard on the citizen, sometimes treat the citizen like common criminals, as if they are not legal, as if they are illegal immigrants in their own country, pursue them, destroy their properties, bring down a whole village sometimes without any compensation. And this is have all shades of wrong in it, because it's not supposed to be. And that is also anchored on the fact that the Land Use Act says that if you are given a piece of land, even when you have proper documentation, the C of O, certificate of occupancy, and others, that land does not belong to you forever. That is another aberration in that law. That the land belongs to you for 99 years. So basically, you are not the owner of the land. You are just a trustee or a guardian of that land to the federal government or to the state government. The state government owns the land. I don't think any community can develop, any country can develop seriously with this. So you invest all this money, you want to have a farm. That's why we don't have generational farming families in Nigeria, commercial farmers. In America, most of the biggest income earners are the farmers, because they have large stocks of land. You know, in 4, 7, 8, 10 generations that have been farming. But in Nigeria, we don't have that. Because most of the time, it is truncated. Imagine in my own place, for example, we have been farming, you know, in Enugu State, for example, those who are in some other places. Farmers are going on for them for 200 years and the rest. And the government just comes out one day, seizes people's land and says they want to build something. So when you talk about the examples you gave, for example, in Alaba, Osun, now, a certain group of people came, traders, without government, support, built a flourishing international market in electronics, for example. Without control, where they were building, the government did not come to issue them caution or tell them to stop work order. The government watches on. People invest hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of naira to develop those places. All of a sudden, the government reappears after a while. Some of these developments have government approved documents. And then government comes back, every government comes back to threaten these people, deal with them, and they just treat them like common criminals. These are investors in your state. And this has been going on. It's happened also in a spandau market at the trade fair. It happens in every market. Demolitions going place everywhere. Even if you want to build something for the public interest, like what was constructed in Oshodi, you have to have a human face to it, because they are citizens of this country. And then, so the government is culpable. If the government allows people to build, for example, without the right permits, or that somebody in the ministry issues a certificate to somebody to build with, and that certificate is not correct, so far it's genuine, then the government should apportion itself the blame for not doing the right thing and pay the adequate compensation. But what we have here, you just bring out a whip out a document that the public is not even aware of. In most of the cases, the public are not aware of most of the document. Whip up a document and say, oh, this document, this place you built is supposed to have drainage. This place you built, for example, a road is supposed to pass here. This place you built was supposed to be a dual carriageway. Who was there approving the buildings? So there's a bigger problem of incompetency or just a matter of connivance by the state, allowing its own officers to issue documents that they know is wrong. And most of this time, the people are not compensated. The people who issue these documents are not compensated. It is the people who have invested that are becoming victims. So the land grabbing issue has become a cancer in our economic development, that some banks and financial institutions do not no more accept the C of O's and the occupancy of any land or building as a collateral for loans. Some of them are suddenly rejecting it. Because all of a sudden, you have a sea of O, your land is secure, you have got a facility from the bank as collateral, and then the next thing, the government demolishes the land and says it's their own. The bank runs at loss, you run at loss. And so we cannot build a viable economy with this kind of thing, because real estate, land development and all those are one of the biggest state assets for any nation in the world. And you go to London, why can people buy properties easily in London, in Luxembourg, in Paris, in the United States? It's because they value the real estate, they know the inflow that comes from the real estate. Well, Nigeria is treating its own real estate as if it is a zone for war, a zone where you can obliterate people, conquer people. And most of the times, when these things are taken for the so-called overriding public interest, we find out that most of them are for private development of the people in the office, be it the governor, be it the minister, or be it for the president, or whoever is in power most of the time. So it is not, most of the time, not for public interest. And even if it is for overriding public interest, the people must be part of the profit generationally and also be properly compensated, relocated, and given a lease of life. If it is business, they have to look for alternative. You don't destroy your home market and say, oh, they are causing menace. A lot of our political leaders behave like emperors. And this is not good for the economy. It's one of the things that make it not have a retarded economy.
What are the organizations that are mediating this unfortunate conflict between the corrupt, I would say corrupt, government and the people? I'm talking about the courts. What is the activity or actions or responses of mediating organizations like the civil society organizations or the court? How are they responding to this in terms of bridging that gap or mediating that conflict between the demolisher and the people that are losing their land?
Coincidentally, I'm a fellow of the Institute of Chartered Mediators and Conciliators, and also a faculty member at the Institute. So I'm a chartered mediator by profession too. And what has happened most of the time is the federal government does not even see any need for mediation. Sometimes cases are even in court. Courts have given pronouncements on stay of execution order, on injunctions, on even judgments that prohibits government from taking action. Government flouts those judgments, go all the way. A case is in court, they act prejudice, they are sub judice, go ahead, do what they want to do, nothing happens to anybody. The governor enjoys immunity, the people that deal with it are not arrested. So the government has conquered the instruments that are supposed to check it. When you now come to mediation, the government feels that it is in its own power, its own might, and its own authority to deal with its citizens however they like, and that the citizens have no right to complain. So when you do mediation, for example, most of the civil societies are handicapped. The citizens like to cry out. Most of the time, these issues of land grabbing by the government, because the highest land grabbers are the government of the various states, both the local government, state government, and federal government. They're the highest land grabbers. And it's because of that, the some citizens follow them suit, the traditional rulers, some powerful individuals, people just walk to somebody's house and confiscate it. So if government was not doing it, individuals should not follow. So a lot of time, the government just thinks it's in their own rights, that they own the land, and can do with anybody anyhow they like. So they're not even available for mediation. So the civil societies, most of the time, talk about it. Most of the time, write about it. Most of the time, campaign against it, like what we are doing here. But the laws that make the government to, that empowers the government to do it and make them enablers of this kind of issues, the laws are still there, protecting them. But again, the Land Use Act itself is not totally wrong. It's just the application, just like what is applicable in most of our phases of life in Nigeria. Our constitution, as the way it is, has no serious fundamental problem. It's just that the way we apply it. So when you apply the laws in a draconian way, when you apply the law not for the overriding public interest, but for reasons, personal gains, and to make a point. You know that sometimes the governors just destroy people's property to make a point, to tell you that they're powerful, just to make a point politically, and say, so we can deal with you when we wish it. And because they get away with this thing. Most of the time when the person leaves office, those kind of actions don't come up. The only thing that comes up sometimes is the issues of embezzlement and corruption to EFCC, ICPC. But those fundamental atrocities that were committed beyond financial crimes are not even investigated most of the time. So that is a place the civil society can come in. Because there's this void. So most of the time, when a governor loses his immunity for the actions he committed in office, most of the time it's just the financial crimes that they trace that they check. What of the human crimes? What of the social crimes and other crimes that are committed when they were in power? I think the civil society should begin to even start with the former governors and begin to interrogate these things, begin to investigate them I begin to bring some of those things to the fore. However, most of the civil societies are incapacitated by funding. They don't have the right fund, the fund to do this investigation or do some of the things that they're supposed to do. So that is the quagmire we find ourselves right now.
We've seen, I was watching, there's a recent documentary that has just come out. I was watching it a few days ago and was looking at Lagos, looking at the blatant brazen inequality. When you go to the island, to Lekki and other sites, and then you look at what's happening in the mainland, look at Makoko, for instance, and how people have been displaced. And you're talking about them. And then I was watching one woman that's talking about the hopelessness, talking about the injustice to the people and the hopelessness of where to get justice for these people. So what I'm hearing, should Nigerians be see this as a hopeless situation? Is this one where they don't have to fight for it? Or is there hope? And if there's hope, where should they be looking and how should they be able to enforce their rights and know their rights? What would you recommend? Because I know you've just mentioned the civil society, but you know, to add to it, to expand to it, how would you recommend, you know, correcting this obvious inequality and obvious unfairness in the dealings between state and citizen?
One of the easiest recommendation is the issue of mass housing. There's a lot of housing deficits in Nigeria. The population growth, the rural-urban migration is exploding every day. There are no commensurate housing to cater for the geometric increase in the population that we are having. And that is a big problem. So unfortunately, the government has abandoned mass housing. They have also abandoned, you know, the issue of even mortgage in the strictest sense of it. But unfortunately, the federal government is reinventing something on what they call MREF, I think. There's something they are bringing up now, transferring the funding of mortgage to commercial banks. And that has to be followed strictly. But when we check the 70s, especially the 60s, 70s, and sometimes in the 80s, we noticed that the federal government and the state governments were aggressively involved in mass housing. I grew up in two places where the federal government, you know, had very serious mass housing. My father worked in the Nigerian Sugar Company in Bashita, in Kwara State. I was born there. And 90% of the real estate there was built by the federal government, the sugar company there. So there were mass housing for junior staff. In fact, there were house housing for mid-level staff. There was housing for senior management and the rest. So these houses were there. And they were calling them sugar house. They called them housing and all those things. So the staff were accommodated. So there was no housing crisis. And when I was like 9 years old, I went to live with my uncle on my uncle on my own request. And my uncle was working with a Delta Steel Company, Omi Alaja, in Warri. Where the steel plants, you know, the federal government built houses that are even more than the staff. They built houses for future expansion of the company and the future staff they would take. So some of the houses were even empty because there were no people to occupy them. So the staff were adequately, you know, contained because there were four housing estates. In fact, they don't call them estates, they call them towns because that is what they were. They call them townships, three, town one, two, three, and four. So government was planning there. Shell also in Warri had his own housing estate. Petroleum Training Institute, PTI, had his own housing estate. NNPC, you know, Group, has his own housing estate. So companies were having estates. That took up the pressure. But what has happened? In the last 40 years, the companies have collapsed. Industries have gone. Those real estates, like my own uncle, the Indians that bought Global Steel had no money to pay them their money for their pension, for their, you know, gratuity and the rent. So they just converted the house and gave them to the workers. Now, when you come to Lagos, for example, in the 70s, we had mass housing. For example, if you go to Lagos today, there's a lot of places you hear Jakonde. bus stops, areas. That was because those mass housing, if you go to Yamapanya, if you go to Lekki, if you go to every corner of Lagos, you hear Jakonde, Jakonde housing. Yes. This man did it under 4 years. Mass housing were done that could give people, you know, access to their homes. If those, imagine if that, if those traditions were followed in the last 40 years, we would not have had the problem of housing the way we are having it. So the government has abdicated the responsibility to the citizens, which is the security and welfare. The welfare of citizens have been put in the background. In fact, have put in the dustbin. So you are asking for recommendations. One of the recommendations would be that the federal government, the state government, and everyone should come back to the issue of mass housing. It's very critical because they've abandoned housing of citizens to real estate developers who are capitalists. So even the so-called the developers have bastardized the concept of mortgage. They will tell you that, oh, you want to pay mortgage, okay, without having a mortgage of 2 years. What kind of mortgage? You know, mortgage are things that are wrong for a 30-year-old is starting a mortgage of 30 years and it starts running, paying gradually, and then it moves in, you federal government builds the house or the state, and then you start taking it from time. That is how these people, that is why an 18-year-old or 20-year-old in the United States, for example, can own a property. So if that is done, then we will reduce these issues of even the land grabbing and all this kind of. So mass housing will solve a lot of it. Then town planning, adequate town planning. A lot of the states are now doing GIS mapping of their land, using technology to map out all their land, to know every sector, exception of the land owned by the government. It doesn't stop there. Even at that, the government still allows unscrupulous individuals within the ministry and outside it to sell land to unsuspecting victims. This has to stop. So this document should be made public. I think Lagos State is doing something like that. I think Enugu State too, where Enugu State has what they call engines, you know, where they now, you have geolocated your land and all those things. And when people want to buy land, the first thing should be to go to that place and check if that thing is approached or is available for you. And then, but the sensitization is not much across board. Things need to be improved. The citizens need to know what they are going in for to buy land, to know whether it's available or not for use. And with that, there will be confidence in the system. Town planning is very, very important. The government should not leave the issue of urban, you know, expansion or rural expansion to individuals. It should be properly monitored. Some states are even having competition. Some states are having development, housing development authorities, and doing a competition with, in fact, the pricing some of them give is even higher than the price individual developers give. So these aberrations must stop. Mass housing, government has the resources on behalf of the people to provide these buildings for them. Some of them, these things are supposed to be subsidized, but the government places it so high that it's only the elites that can buy them. These are the aberrations. This has to stop. The civil societies now need to have sensitization, now need to have all kinds of awareness created, and also have to have a kind of accountability. But they cannot be able to do these things if they are pauperized, and then a lot of them hardly, survive and have a better life. So if this conversation could bring thoughts change, to empower the civil societies, to, you know, make it a front burner for further discussion, to engage the government, and to hold the government accountable in some of these things, then we'll keep on talking about these things even in the next 50 years.
That makes sense. There's something you mentioned, which I think is a bit of an irony or paradox. So I wanted to clarify that. So when you started off, you started by saying the Land Use Act, which I agree, is a military document. So it's a militarized document with all of these bogus, vague sentences and clauses. But you then again, in your further comments, you said, you know, there's nothing really, really wrong with the Land Use Act. It's the application. Can you clarify that aspect?
What I mean is that if we are to honestly implement the Land Use Act as it is now, without the shenanigan of the selfishness of the government, we won't have the land grabbing issues the way we have them today. That is what I want to say. Even our constitution, That is what I beseeched a lot of our laws. Sometimes we have laws on paper. If we are really, really eager to make the society better, if the government really wants things to work for the citizens, even the way Land Use Act is currently constituted, there will not be land grabbing. But because the intentions are usually evil, the intentions are usually to defraud the citizens. That is why they manipulate every law. They look for situations to manipulate every law to punish the citizens. That is exactly what I was trying to infer. But the Land Use Act itself as a document has no place in a democratic setting in the 21st century, has no place in a country that wants to grow its economy. But what I was now saying, that even the way it's constituted, there can still be the way it's implemented with a human face and with an intention to build the economy. But because that is not being followed, it is what it is with our country, where we ensure that things don't work well. Where those who are ruling ensure that they find a way to manipulate the laws against the citizens.
Let me come to the last question. So, because it, also in our land, there's a place for compensation as well. In that part five, but in most of all of these land grabbing and land demolition, like you rightly mentioned, I don't think there's been compensation or proper compensation where compensations have happened. How do you see that increasing the poverty of the people? And how do you also see them leading to conflict like crime in the society, insurgency? Is there any linkage between all of these, the level of injustice, also looking, if I trace it back to also the civil war back now and seeing the level of injustice that have built up in Nigeria and looking at how all of these adding to that, do you think it has a role to play in the insecurity and how it leads people to poverty and also might push them into insurgency? And how should we deal with it?
Yes, it has. If you take the issues of territorial access and territorial ownership over the years, if you are a student of history, globally, you will see that the issues of territory and land has been causes of a lot of the wars in the history of mankind, from the ancient Greeks to the Roman Empire, to the Ottoman Empire, even to the Middle Ages here. Territories have been conquered, even currently. Russia, even Ukraine. And so the issues of land has always caused international wars, because countries have fought each other, communities have fought each other. Now, but when it comes to Nigeria's case, where the laws are so draconian, it has, in fact, been one of the major sources of conflict. Because let's take example of oil exploitation. After oil was discovered in the Niger Delta and the subsequent use of oil, because the exploitation of oil is in the exclusive list of the constitution, then where all the exploitation of both minerals, solid and other kinds of minerals, are vested in the federal government, the community had no say. So you see somebody from San Francisco having oil well in Bomadi, in Niger Delta. Somebody from Enugu having oil well there. Somebody from Ekiti having oil well there. Somebody from Kano and all those things. They just share these oil wells, oil fields, invite foreigners, the federal government invite foreigners to begin to exploit oil without recourse to this to the community people. In doing that, they have polluted the land for many years, and there was nothing the federal government was doing about it. So what happened? It led to agitations, of course, agitations that were not answered. And some of the agitators, who like Kensaro Wiwa, the Ogoni, the Mossop group, and some of those, the early ones, even Isaac Adakabo, in the 60s, some of these people paid the supreme prices. They were killed because of their agitations. What happened somewhere in the late 90s and the early millennia, some people just took up arms and started bombing everywhere because they couldn't have it anymore. So you could see how long the crisis lasted. Now, but when we come again to the, let me even give you, if for example, the ownership of those lands were vested on the community, what do you think would have happened? The federal government would have called the community leaders, come to the community, negotiate with them, tell them that I've discovered oil here. This is the implication for it. This is this, this is that. The community will express their fears and say, okay, oil pollution, we don't want it. Because in a lot of countries where crude oil is well exploited, there are no pollutions. Every environmental design to prevent pollution is there. So Nigeria is not the only oil producer, but Nigeria is one of the countries that has destroyed communities because they're extracting oil from their land. And then when you tell the community that this land, this is our business, it's your business, but we want to be, want to spearhead it. This is how much is coming to the community. These are the developments we have to do. These are the rest. But that was not done. That was just taking, people were just in their villages, heavy equipment came, helicopters started flying over them, all kinds of things. And they just started exploiting oil. Soldiers were escorting oil men. Community leaders couldn't talk. Community leaders were killed. And at the end of the day, the conflict erupted. Then the federal government started doing the upper deck those days, that later transformed to NGDC. Oh, big hospital for them here. Do this thing here. Later, they were able to get 30% derivation formula. These are treating symptoms and not treating the root cause. The same thing has started happening in the north now. If the owners, if the landlords, the owners of the land were giving vested interest to own the mineral that is underneath their earth, the first thing that would have been when they discover like gold, some of the gold that have been discovered, it meets the people. You discuss with them, they become business partners with the federal government. Ratios of profits are determined and everything. Nobody will start it. But because they were not in charge, some people started coming illegally to tap the mineral, the solid mineral there. And the one of the things is to displace the people so that they don't have access. So to come directly to your question, this land grabbing has caused a lot of crisis. They have instigated terrorism. Communities have been sacked. People have been killed heartlessly. So because the pattern is this, if these illegal miners come to a place, what they want to do is to ensure that the community is not present so that nobody will hinder the operation. Some time ago, we saw videos of a small plane landing inside a forest. Some people say it was in Nigeria. And they were saying that, what is the plane doing inside the forest? And some people suspected that they're moving gold and the rest. So it has really cost a lot. And again, in terms of even agriculture, some people have sacked communities, came in, hoisted their flag, and remained in those communities. So again, some people, pastoralists, move around with their cow, going to people's farms, destroying them. And we are still treating them as if these things are normal, because pasturing is a private business, just like crop farming is a private business. So these issues are compounded the whole thing, because the federal government is treating pastoralism as if it is a national business. Meanwhile, these are businesses of individuals. So if you are selling spare parts, you now carry a container of spare parts and block the expressway and say that because federal government must look for a shop for you. So what's happened to our ranching system? Because people are ready to grab land to feed their cow and all those things, and displacing the farmer, it has led to serious consequences of insecurity. So the insecurity also comes from the fact that the people want to sack villages to tap their gold, to tap their coal, and some other lithium, and some of these rare earth minerals that people are now using for production of electronics. But again, this happens because the community are not even the owners of their land. The people who own the land are far away from Some of them are 200 kilometers away. Some state governors have never visited there. The ministry don't even know what is happening there. Yes, they claim to be owners of the land. And when these things happen, the people suffer. There are crises everywhere. There is conflict. There is massacre. It's terrorism. Yet, the people lose the most.
Wow, Ambrose, this is I wish we can go all day talking about this. I agree with all of your analysis, and I share your optimism that the people that are invested or that should do stuff can hear this, and then you know we can amplify our voices and use this kind of platform to create that sort of awareness or consciousness in the people as well. Not just the government, because the people, an enlightened people, are then able to fight for their rights and ensure that their rights is being honored. So, but I really appreciate your very, very deep insights into the subject. Thank you for honoring our invitation. And I will leave with this and say that there's a fundamental problem in the social contract between citizens and the state and the government in Nigeria, and that needs to be tackled, that needs to be addressed. And that is the foundation of all of the problem. Well, thank you very much once again, and I wish you the best, and I'll be in touch shortly.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Brilliant. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. As usual, join me to thank our guest, Ambrose Ibuke, for his very rich analysis of how illegal demolition, land grabbing, and the outdated militarized land activism. For now, stay blessed and I'll see you next time.